Hi, this is Damon Pastolka, host of The Faces of Business, where I talk with interesting people sharing life and business experiences to entertain, engage, build community, and provide information to help others succeed. If you're interested in learning more about one of our guests or how we are helping business owners generate wealth and build businesses they can sell or succeed at Exit Your Way, you can find more information on our website, exityourway.com, or by contacting me directly, damon@exityourway.com. I hope you enjoy the show. All right, everyone. Welcome once again to The Faces of Business. I'm your host, Damon Pastolka. And yes, I just came out of a laugh-a-thon with our guest today, Andrew Deutsch. And we're going to be talking about the dangers of economic hostages. Andrew, welcome.
Thanks for having me back on, man. It's good to see you.
Oh, this is great. So Andrew is currently the CEO of the Ecotech Group. We're going to have him talk a little bit about that. And then after that, let's have you define what is an economic hostage. Absolutely. After you tell us about what you're doing now.
Yeah, the Ecotech Group is a home services brand, actually a series of brands. So we've brought together an exterior cleaning, house wash, roof cleaning, gutter, lower pressure, ergonomically and ecologically better. So many people destroy their, our biggest competitor in that division is folks with power washers who just pretend they're Zorro and scratch Z's into their siding instead of cleaning it. And then we also have a division. And by the way, in that division, we do roofs, we do gutters, and we also clean out dryer vents to keep houses from burning down. And then we have another division called the Junk Bros, which is a decluttering business. Our crews go out and completely remove all the junk from people's houses that they've been wishing had been removed 25 years ago. And lastly, in the off season, we have a holiday lighting division. So people can contract us to design, install, and then at the end of the season, so you don't have to climb the ladder, we do it for you. We take it all right back down and store it for you till next year.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And those are pretty valuable services. And I just wonder, does Junk Bros have a psychologist on staff that can convince my better half that we really don't need to keep that stuff that's been sitting there for 10 years and not been used?
It's usually the other way around, Damon. Your wife, by the way, called me about an hour ago and I told her you're out of our service area. But all that sofa from your college dorm room, it's gotta go.
No, it doesn't. It has history. It has history. Well, awesome. Awesome. That's so much fun. So Andrew, we'll talk about a little bit more about that because I want to understand some of the stuff you've learned in Ecotech as you've been, sure, been around there, but let's talk about economic hostages and what you mean by that to start with.
It's when you set up a system where a financial benefit prevents people from making the right decision for themselves. And it goes back to, I mean, the days of the company store. So for people who don't know what that is, back in the days of mining and other types of situations, in these secluded areas, companies would set up a store that charged people so much that by the time you got your paycheck, you were already in debt more than what you received, which meant that you could never leave until you finally caught up your debt. So that in an extreme form, that's the original sort of idea of what an economic hostage is. Oh, but yeah, Now there's a lot of examples that that people think as business owners make a lot of sense, but in the long run, when you really dig into the total effect, not what it means in the moment, but what it means down the road, is not clever and can actually hurt your business. So, I mean, how many sales guys do you know that around, I don't know, September, are done. They don't like where they're working anymore. There's all these job offers out there, but they don't go anywhere because they're being held hostage by the bonus that's getting paid in January. January, I always refer to it as quitting season. If I know that I'm going to be adding staff to my team, I wait till January to start throwing the resumes out there. Why? Because all these guys just got their bonus and they quit. So the company thinks in this particular instance of holding that hostage, they go, well, wait a minute. If we move the bonuses out until January, these guys are going to stay with the company. We've got great employee retention. What a great idea. what they actually get most of the time are sales folks who are just phoning it in the absolute minimum so that they can get by, get their bonus, and move on to something better.
Mm-hmm.
So another is stock options in a company or shares in a company or anything similar to that, to where even profit sharing programs, where you're not eligible to get your profit sharing until March of the year after. And if you're not there anymore, you're no longer eligible for it. You can't get it. So you stick around, you phone it in, knowing that you're going to leave, but you want to make sure you get that check.
Mm-hmm.
It really, you know, when company pensions switch to the 401ks with matching funds that are vested over a period of time, yet another form. Are mm-hmm. knowing that if you stick around for another 6 months, you're going to be fully vested with all of the money that the company put in. Do you or don't you make that decision based on the dollars? So all of those are examples of the ways that companies hold people for that purpose. And in the end of the day, it's probably counteractive to the actual productivity and the culture of the business.
Yeah, it could be to their detriment. That's for sure.
Dead wood becomes a dead anchor to the rest of the culture of the business.
Yeah. It's a good point. So we're going to talk about economic hostages in just a moment. I've got several questions I want to ask about that, and some other options in your mind. But let's talk a little bit about your background. I mean, you've been in the marketing and leadership space quite a while, helping companies grow. So what really drew you into the Ecotech Group, and what are some of the things that you've really had fun with or challenges that have lit your fire while you've been there?
Sure. You know, my career, we've known each other for a while now. I think, what, two, 3 years, no?
Something like that, yeah.
seems like a millennia.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. You know, my career began in global trade. Most of my adult life, I was helping American companies set up distribution, sales, joint ventures, and business in other countries. So I was very much involved in really understanding the true value as it relates to the culture where it's selling. So mm-hmm. that was sort of the beginning of my experience. And then after many, many years on the road, I just couldn't do it anymore. I was flying, 300,000 miles a year, 45 something countries every year. I was unhealthy and decided to make a shift. But at the same time was like, you know what? I learned so much that now I can put it into other things that are using that. So I started to do business development and creative work in looking for how companies can expand their markets. And I worked as an employee and also said it, going back into the consulting world, really finding where companies get stuck, understanding mm-hmm. where that true value proposition was, and leveraging that to create strategic marketing plans that led to the tactics that grew the business. So over the last, I don't know, 6-7 major projects, a private equity group buys a company that's failing after they bought it, how to get in and restructure the company to make that happen, and multiple projects over the years. And then an opportunity popped up to truly just take over an entire business that is already successful, but looking to next level in a way that the current ownership needed help to do. So they made me an offer to come in and partnered with the owner, completely mm-hmm. rebrand, restructure, and redefine the value proposition of the company, revamp the entire operations of the business and make it significantly more profitable. And the challenge there was super exciting. It's probably, you know, at my age, it may be the last major project that I do before I just do retirement consulting and helping folks out from there.
Nice. Yeah. So what have been some of the fun things that you've got to do?
The greatest part was really getting to start somewhere where everybody was on board for growth. My history has always been walking into these companies that are distressed with employees that are on the edge. So my first month at almost any position I've ever taken has been surrounded by people saying, this isn't what we do. And my role was to say, well, if what you do was working, why'd they bring me here?
Yeah.
why did they need an outside set of eyes? Yeah. So, and it's an interesting thing about this business is it entails all the work that I had done in the past in the chemical industry. Mm-hmm. It entails really looking at the value proposition for what the market is in an area that I've not worked in, which is home services. I have a background of personally in construction and building and other things. So all of those interests that I have sort of played into it. And then the next part was really building a culture from a culture that was already good into a brilliant culture where folks can thrive and elevate to greater positions. So I get the opportunity to coach an incredible sales team that's ready to learn and wants to grow, restructure and build an incredible marketing strategy that's already being implemented and showing the signs of life that we're on the right track, come up with creative campaigns. And there's just been some really, really cool stuff going on. I mean, I think the biggest learning, if you look in the construction industry, and I've done quite a bit of focus reading and what's going on. If you look at the brands on the road, you see the plumbing vehicles going down the street, the power wash guys, it's all high testosterone marketing. And at the end of the day, who's usually at home when the guy shows up?
This is a great point. And I didn't know you're going to bring it up. It's a great point.
There might be a female or a male house with children in the house who's not interested in the guy with the big muscles holding the hammer on the carpenter's truck or holding the, you know, the. Yeah. So how do you take the testosterone out of the marketing, out of the brand, out of the thing, and create a brand that truly is enticing to a family? And this is something that we've started to do with the branding. And as we've interviewed and talked to homeowners, the idea in the industry, they call it the chuck in a truck. You know, the guy with the old days with the cigarette pack rolled up in his sleeve.
Yeah.
Today, who still got the breath of the beer he had yesterday, coming to the house to do whatever he's going to do, and to mm-hmm. pre-know through what we can do with social media to have fun and get customers to recognize the safety factor, the quality, the skill set, and a brand that speaks to a family. It's a very different approach than anyone else in the industry, and it works. Because I think it looks cool to see, you know, a guy holding a power washing gun with flames coming out of it, doesn't mean that that's gonna attract the market space with people who are looking to have their homes cleaned.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Getting your brand to speak to the family, because you don't care if your power washer will spit flames out of it. You just want to make sure it's going to get done and it's going to be clean and look great. Yeah. And you're not going to screw with your dog or the kids or the shrubs and all the kind of stuff that you run into that can go wrong.
And at the end of the day, I've been preaching this for many, many years. If you believe that you are your brand, start over. You are your customer.
The brand
has to speak to what the customer wants, not what you want. Opening mm-hmm. up a music store only selling what you like to listen to is probably not going to do much business.
Yeah. That's a great example. I like that example. Sell music store only selling what you like. You're only going to sell you. And that's not going to pay the bills the long run.
Especially since I already own the albums and there's nobody else to buy them. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Good. Well, God, that's really cool, because you're in a place now where you can really fuels your passion, because you've got people around you that want to grow just as badly as you do.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've really got one of the best teams that I've ever worked with in my entire career right now.
Oh my goodness. That's got to be just a thrill.
It really is, and they're committed, and they're really off to a good start, and the ability to provide and listen to feedback from folks that are in the game to win it is a very different experience than the old consulting, where you're wondering for the first month if it's ever going to happen because nobody's on board with what you're talking about.
That's awesome. So let's get back to talking about the economic hostages, because you get me excited about growing businesses and that kind of stuff. And I will ask you one thing, one more, because you guys are putting the business and this home services business on the growth path. I've had some other guests in the past talk about home services. What are some of the real challenges you see to growing these home services brands?
Well, when you're building, most of the guys in the home services industry fall on the death sword of tactics. So they go, okay, I gotta get my Google up. I've got to get people to my website. I've got to get leads. But they don't really understand the actual density. And I'll give you an example. I know of another power washing company who's a friend of our company. He does an extremely impressive amount of sales within a 7 miles of his office. Nothing beyond that. He does all of his business. There's other guys in our business that do the same level of business, but they cover 3 states.
Yeah.
Guess which one's more profitable?
Yes.
The guys who don't travel far. Every mile with a crew in a car or in a truck is an expense. Mm-hmm. So understanding and really being able to slice, dice, and dig down to understand every street, every house, every neighborhood in terms of its potential and the culture of that neighborhood to increase your density within your space. So many of these guys are like, well, you know, I'm only an hour away from the next city. We'll open up a branch office there and we'll grow without ever really harvesting all the density in their own space. And the other is, no matter how much money you spend on marketing, nothing will grow your business better than going back to the old fangled way. Every touch is a voracious advocate for your brand. So every sale that you make should be treated as theater in a way that when you leave that property, the experience of having the house washed is enough to want to call 10 of your friends and go, holy crap, can you imagine what Ecotech could do for you? Because that personal referral, all the digital age, nothing is better than a personal referral. You got to call these guys. You got to do business with these guys. They're amazing. Even when there's an issue, you missed a spot. Well, we'll be back tomorrow and straighten that out for you. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Just recently, we had a customer that called and she was upset because our policy is, because our time is so valuable, we need to get a deposit before we schedule an appointment. Mm-hmm. And someone new to the company who wasn't necessarily thinking at the moment said to the person, no, I need your deposit. And the person said, tell me when you're coming and I'll give you the deposit. And the person wrote a bad Google review. That was, she, screw you, I'm not doing business with you, wrote a bad Google review. I, as the CEO, reached out to the customer and said, hey, this is a policy I put in place because when we have bookings that don't have deposits, we show up, we don't do the work, we lose money. I'm mm-hmm. so sorry that this happened because the person really didn't follow procedure. I want to make it right. Can I have my crew out there on Monday morning to get this straightened out? Well, the consumer was amazed. On the Sunday, they got a phone call from the CEO of a company.
Yeah.
Booked the call. My crew went out and did regular job to the customer. Yep. It was the supreme, because we always do the supreme. And guess what? She took down the Google review, wrote a 5-star, praised the company, asked for additional services. We're going back to do her deck, I believe the roof and some windows, as a second, for the same value as the first round, and gave our name to the homeowners association where she lives to tell them that we should be the one that they recommend to people. So, you know, that's the key to this. The, you know, we're selling in your neighborhood. We should feel like your neighbor.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great quote. I'm going to write that down. Because that is really what service is about, is creating, you know, doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. And let me tell you about a team that like we've got now. So in our industry, one of the issues in our business is that there are months where there's ice on the ground and people aren't getting their house washed, which is mm-hmm. part of the reason that we began the holiday lighting business. But we're also looking for other things to keep our crew active during those months, because those are potential revenue months and typically they're not hot. So I put the challenge out there to the team. I said, hey guys, we're looking for solutions. What can we do in these off seasons? What are additional things that we should be offering that we're fully capable of doing that don't add liability to the company? Don't, you know, we have to know how to do it right or we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
And since I put out that challenge, I've had 5 employees who normally have no contribution besides doing great work, come to me with ideas that were brilliant for new services that we're now contemplating taking to.
That's awesome. That is incredible when you can do that, because they, they're engaged in the company trying to help in those off season times, and you're getting great ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the culture that, that will take this company way beyond the next level.
Yeah. So cool. So cool. All right. Well, I would love to talk about the Ecotech Group, and we're going to have to check back at, you know, give us some time next year, check back and see how things are going, because this is an exciting time for you, and would love to see the progress over time. But we're talking today about the dangers of the economic hostages. And you talked about that before, and you gave the example of how, you know, in the old days when they had company stores, you could get your paycheck, but you go spend it plus some at the company store. So you had to be back to work to go again. And we were talking about the sales people with the bonuses paid in January, and January being quitting season because everybody wants to wait until the bonuses checks are cash and they've done it. And you know what? I can't tell you how many management leaders across the board that I know that's they've done that. They wait until it's usually March, the end of March, everything's done, and people are looking for new jobs if they weren't happy last year.
Absolutely.
So, and you talked about a couple other ones too. You talked about stock options. I think that one's an interesting one too, because it's used so much. I mean, when you look at some of these big companies, that's sometimes that's the lure for people to stay there.
Yeah. And you know, there's another one I neglected to bring up, health insurance.
Yeah.
Health insurance. If you are completely miserable where you work, but haven't yet found another position, you're going to stick around like crazy, because the day you leave, the cobra begins. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you know, a family's paying $1,800, $1,500 a month to maintain the ability to have health insurance until they find the next position. I'll never quite understand when we decided that businesses are responsible for the health insurance. I know that it's an attractive thing to go work for a company. But it's another form of economic hostagery. If you're working somewhere, and I've even seen it where someone actually threatens an employee, if you don't get your production up, you know, you'll be gone, and I don't know what you're going to do about your health insurance. You're going to lose your bonus. You're going to lose this and that. You better perform more. And they think that they're doing a good thing, but instead they're just creating bad culture, disgruntled employees, and people who phone it in.
Wow, that's got me thinking now. That really, the health insurance piece has got me thinking there.
Yeah,
because it is a, you know, if you look at two companies side by side, and one company was paying zero for the health insurance, but they were paying a higher wage to compensate for that, that's actually a better thing than the company that's not paying for the health, that's paying a lot on the health insurance, or paying some of the health insurance.
It all depends on where you're at. And of course, if the younger your employees are, the less the health insurance matters to them, even though it should. If you're employing a bunch of 20-year-olds and you tell them, well, I only pay this, but you get health insurance, they're like, I haven't been to the doctor in 5 years, get lost. And then they call you a boomer and they walk off and you go, wait a minute, I'm not a boomer. Sorry.
I'm a Gen Xer. Yeah. So it's like, no, I'm not a boomer. I'm a Gen Xer. Yeah. But it's an interesting thought. Just wait one second. I have a demanding partner once in a while he's a 1-year-old Westie.
Oh, so I like Westies.
Yeah. So, this is interesting. Now, when you look at this, these are some long standing traditions. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at stock options, when you look at health insurance, when you look at, any of these things that you've talked about. So,
There's one more actually that I had to mention. Let's get it.
Yeah.
There was a company back in, I'm not going to say who it was. I don't want to get sued. There's a company that was in the warehouse distribution business of a certain electronic product that I was aware of. Mm-hmm. And the owner put in a cafeteria, and all the employees could go there and get their meals at the place. And he told the employees, well, you know, I'm concerned because there aren't great restaurants nearby. Of course, there are. And I've decided that I want to provide you with the meals as a courtesy to keep you going. I was in the boardroom when he told the team, I'm putting in the cafeteria so these people won't go out and overstay their lunch. I need them at their desk. And you know, if you're an employee, you're the meal that you're getting for free in this cafeteria within his facility seems like a perk.
Yeah.
But in the actual motive behind the CEO of this corporation was, this is how I keep people captive. They're not going to go out for lunch. There's no, you know, they're not going to get drunk at lunch. They're not going to go out and get high. I mean, he had this attitude of it. And the reality is, if you're an employee, it's a great perk. But at the end of the day, the motive behind it was to hold hostages. Of course, in this case, it was calorie hostages, not economic hostages. But, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great example of it. I mean, I think about other places that have, you know, beer Fridays or whatever the heck they have, and all the, you know, they're going axe throwing every week or whatever they're doing and all that kind of stuff. And that's all good and dandy if it's in the right setting and if it's in the right culture. But, you know, I still go back to my daughter's first job out of college was horrible, but they lured her in with, we do all these outdoor activities and we do all this company stuff. And she got into it and the culture was just absolutely crap.
Yeah.
And in 6 months she was sick of it. In a year, you know, I think she stayed close to a year or something. I don't even remember, but it was just like, it was, you know, coming home in tears kind of thing from it.
Yeah.
So bad.
Well, in the vending space, there's all of these companies that provide on every floor, they'll have a cooler with beverages. They'll have snacks, even companies that encourage the employees to take as much as they want. And at the end of the day, what's the motive? If there's lots of snacks and food, they'll stick around longer, they'll work longer, and they won't go home. And that's where you get this Silicon Valley sort of mindset of these 12, 14-hour days. And, you know, because why? I can get chips, I can get beef jerky, I can get Veggie Delight out of the machine for free. The boss is paying for it. What a great guy. And at the same time, there's a motive behind it of, well, this will keep these guys around. We'll get more out of them because they're salaried and we don't pay overtime.
Yeah.
A bag of chips is cheaper than overtime.
Yeah. It's like the whole farce behind unlimited vacation too. That was, you know, when people were doing that saying, oh, that's the greatest thing ever. But how many people really took advantage of unlimited vacation other than the companies that didn't have to report it on the balance sheet as an accrued liability?
Yeah.
You know,
and how many people who went on this supposed unlimited vacation that every minute of it was worried, is my job going to be there when I get back?
Yes.
And who's going to be, you know, positioning against me and the rat race kind of cutthroat stuff that happens when you're not in the office.
Yeah. It's interesting bunch of situations here. Mm-hmm. So when you look at this, what are some of the things that you can do that incentivize the right people for the right reasons? I mean, because we've talked a lot about how this can be negative and how those things, what are some ideas to create people that want to stay there for the right reasons and you, the right people? I guess I'm not, I don't know if I said that correctly, but
it sounds like we're talking about some crappy reality show on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you here for the right reasons, Damon?
Oh, yes, I certainly am.
Yeah. No, it, you know, there, I believe that the, for example, in the commission world and bonus world, they shouldn't be an annual situation. They should be happening on a regular basis to check in with your employees. It's an opportunity to check in and really see what's going on, get feedback and help grow the business. I think that if, you know, and many of these things, you know, and some people are listening to this and going, well, you know, the guy was so nice, he gave those people a meal, then it should be out of that motive. You know, we're providing meals here for all the employees. If you want to go out, that's fine. It's not a required thing to stay in the building and eat your meal. Don't make it into an obligation. Make it into a perk. It's wonderful if you work at a place and you come in and there's a great, delicious cup of coffee for you. That's not the same as we've got all this stuff here. But the expectation is, since we have it, that you're going to be working longer hours.
Yeah,
you want people to work longer hours, pay them for their time.
Yeah.
You know, it's really goes back to that motivation strategy. Most of, there's a fine line between really treating your employees well, having great stuff in the break room, perks, benefits, and otherwise, and using them as levers to manipulate and other. I mean, that's really at the core.
It is.
Yep.
Yeah. You're treating them, just genuinely treating them well, or using those benefits that you're providing as as an anchor.
Yep. Let them know that they're valued. And again, it goes back to Voracious Advocates for Brand. All of your employees should love the brand. Yeah. So you should treat them in a way that when they go home, if I'm working for you and one day decide, hey, I've got a better opportunity somewhere else, I should look back in fondness of where I was. Not in thank God I got away from that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's you shouldn't have PTSD when you leave when you leave a job.
Yeah.
You should have a fond memory of it's, you know, there were people that you dated when you were young that you look back at and go, boy, that was really a great person, just didn't work out. And there's other ones that are like, I hope that demon never crosses my path.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are great examples, you know, and it's funny because I was literally in a meeting this morning with a client. We were talking about their bonus structure and how to get their bonus structure so it's paid every month. It's lagging a little bit by 1 month because they want to make sure that it wasn't something, you know, that was just a one-time kind of thing, but to keep that 12 payments of their bonus on an annual basis if they're doing well and keep it like that. So it is not waiting for the January timeline, because we just recently hired some of that same client, someone that was that had the January bonus situation.
Yeah. And more than one time in my life, I was working with a company that found an amazing sales guy in another company that they were going to hire, and they held the position open because the guy was going to come across in January after he quit, and come January got such a bonus and a promotion, decided not to come.
Yeah.
And now they could have hired 3 or 4 other qualified people for that position in the 4 or 5 months they waited. Mm-hmm. It was, oh no, so and so is coming, and at the end it was a disappointment. So
yeah,
it really boils down to just don't be sneaky, don't look at your employees as property. Look at them as assets of brilliance and ideas and part of your team.
That is it, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Look at your people as the assets that they really are instead of property.
Yeah.
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 Because it is, you feel it. You feel it when you're in those companies where they are grinding people out for everything they can get, or if they're leading and motivating to get the people to be able to do what they can, you know, do their best.
Yep.
It's 2 different things, and you won't get to the same place with the first, where you're trying to grind everything out of people you can.
Yeah. Keep in mind, you know, Damon, when you've got a leader, a CEO, president, whoever's in charge of what's going on in a company, who uses these tactics to hold people hostage, you're typically also dealing with somebody that's got a million other flaws that are damaging them. It's usually someone with massive narcissistic tendencies who really shouldn't be in that position in the first place, because there's many, many other problems. Seeing people being held, and this is a consultant coming in, people seeing companies that use economic hostagery as a strategy for retention is usually the tip of the iceberg to all of the other things that are going on in there that are preventing that company from getting to the next level or even being a place anybody would want to work. I remember years ago, I went to visit a company. I was being interviewed. They were looking for a vice president of sales at the time. And I was supposed to go for an interview on a Friday afternoon at 6 p.m. And I thought, what a strange time for an interview. And the CEO who was going to interview me said, well, that's the only time I have available, so I'm sorry. I walked in and the office was full. And I swear to you, in my creative mind, as I'm walking through the office, I had a vision that all of these people were in the belly of a ship, chained to their desk, rowing.
Mm-hmm.
And they all had the look on the face like, don't do it. Don't do it. That was the look. That was what was going in my head as I'm going through. And I interviewed the CEO who was from another country. And I said, well, you've been in the States now for 4 or 5 years. What are you doing in your free time? He says, I work. That's what I do in my free time. Well, I turned down the position.
Yeah.
Knew the guy who took the job, and 4 months in, he quit. And I asked him why. And he said, God, I felt like I was in a slave ship. That's what he actually said to me. And I was like, oh my God, I had the, you know, I had the vision in my head while, mm-hmm. while I was there. And then he asked me, well, I thought you were the contender. Why didn't you take the job? I said, because it looked like a slave ship. Mm-hmm. It looked like an abusive environment. Friday night, 6 o'clock, middle of the summer, people want to be out with their families and they're chained to their desk. That's not a place.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that is the thing that I hope that more people are realizing is that more time is not necessarily equate to more output.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I've seen business owners that get it. I had a friend of mine that had in a very, very poignant example, I think. He had a roofing company. Mm-hmm. And his roofing company did really well, and it's seasonal, right? You know the seasonal game. So sure. summertime, when he first took over the roofing company, first was owning it and running it, they would work 6 or 7 days a week because they were like, man, we got to get all this roofing done we can because it was in the north and, you know, you only have so mm-hmm. much time. And he said, the one year he did an experiment, he said, I'm only going to work 5 days a week, a maximum of 50 hours mm-hmm. every week. And I'm going to see how much we get done. And I can't remember exactly what it was, but it's been a while. And I think they got almost the exact same amount done.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, people aren't waking up tired on the Saturday and Sunday or missing a day here or there because we are working Monday through Friday. We have very set hours and we know we're going in yep. and we know we're going home. And he said the quality was better. The injury, because that's an injury prone kind of place. He said the injuries went way down, even minor, like, oh, I, you know, whatever, not going to the doctor kind of injuries even. He said mm-hmm. went way down just because of the way they did it. So, and that's, we think that office environments aren't like that, but it's the yep. same thing. And I think almost worse in some cases, because if your mind is not there, how are you going to do solid modeling, design or analysis or creative yep. work or whatever the heck or accounting, for goodness sake.
Yep.
You know, some of this stuff is very hard. Coding, that'd be another one. I'd be going, yeah. Oh man, I don't want them working 70 hours a week.
Yeah. Well, the owner before I came to Ecotech switched up the employees for that very purpose. They work 4 10-hour days, every employee. So they have a 3-day weekend. Yeah. and this is, I mean, they love it. But what's beautiful is, you know, every crew that we run has a vehicle, right? And there's equipment on that vehicle to run. So if mm-hmm. we want to expand, we're currently working a 4-day week. So if we add a fifth and a sixth day, no one can work more than 4 days. What we do is we've increased our capacity to work by 50%, and we don't overwork the team, and we give opportunities for more people to be employed, mm-hmm. which is how we're managing our expansion. And one of those trucks is, you know, with the actual vehicle, the prep of the vehicle to make it appropriate for use with reinforced springs and all the things you have to do, the skid that goes in it with all the equipment that we have, the chemical trays, everything that's in it is a huge investment. What other business is able to do that? When I was in the steel drum industry, what did we do? We added a second shift with all new people, the same equipment, the same fixed costs with additional maintenance. And we were able to double what we could mm-hmm. produce as a company without killing our employees.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are humane solutions. When I say humane, I mean humane to the management, because all of those problems that they don't realize they're alleviating, like employee injuries, illness, time off. It turns out that the equipment doesn't go on strike as often as the employees do when they're overworked.
Yeah.
They just need parts. Humans, we don't, you know, we haven't quite figured out how to make all the parts that we need to keep us going beyond. And the reality is employees that have time to do their family time do much better jobs when they show up. They're not as stressed. They got to see Billy play baseball. They got to see, you know, whatever. They got to enjoy the grandkids. They got to do all these wonderful things.
Yeah.
6-day, 12-hour days is great, as long as you add to your benefit beyond the health insurance. You also provide, you know, funeral assistance.
Yeah, it's really something to see what that time to do something different allows people to do.
Yeah. And and employees who are treated well love what they do. What is that? The old expression, it's never work if you love what you're doing, something like that.
Yeah, kind of like that.
It's something like
that. Kind of like that. And you know, and when you know, as you said before, if you're creating voracious advocates for your brand, it's that they have integrated their work and their life together in a very comfortable way. And and when one isn't overpowering the other, that's a very comfortable way. People call it balance. I don't call it balance because it's never balance. You're going to do one more than the other all the time. But if it's integrated appropriately and you're happy with where it's at, that's the main thing. And
I was at Home Depot, Damon, just 2 days ago. I went home to Ohio for the weekend and came back on Monday, and one of my sales guys grabbed me at the airport. We went to Home Depot to get some material. We're going to do a demonstration. We've got pieces of that Trex decking.
Oh yeah.
We're going to hit half of it with a power washer and do the other half with our equipment and show people why DIY is dangerous. So we went to the pro desk at Home Depot and started talking to the woman there, and she had no idea that there was the power washing really was a danger to people's decks and homes. So we gave her a little bit of an education about what we do, how we do. You know how the conversation ended? Can you guys give me a stack of your cards, because so many people could use your services and I'd love to pass them out for you. Didn't ask for a commission, didn't ask for a finder's fee. All she did was become a massive advocate, a voracious advocate for the Ecotec brand. And we'll probably start seeing calls.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Because it's doing the right thing is what it is. You're helping to educate people on they have choices or different ways to do it. And, and there are people that will do it technically better.
Yep. I told the team on the first day, I said, I don't know the business yet. I haven't been here for an hour. But one thing is for sure that I know is fact. From here forward, our goal is to make everyone's life better one property at a time. That's what we're in the business of doing.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And if you do that, you won't go wrong. That's for sure.
Yep.
Good stuff. Well, Andrew, it's been a pleasure, man. I always love our time together and, you know, talking about the dangers of economic hostages. I think it really is a wake-up call for owners that are using these incentives or way that they're paying or just other what are so-called benefits to hold people when they really shouldn't is something that they might want to reconsider and really think about. What can I do to create a place where people want to be here? You know, if I'm paying a fair wage, that's cool. I don't have to pay the best wage in the world. I just have to pay a fair wage and have a great place to work, and I'm probably going to have better people hanging around.
Yeah, well, you don't have to hold hostages if they want to be there.
That's true. That's true. And you know, it's a funny example because, and I know I was trying to wind down, but I just thought of this. There was a guy that was talking about, this is a 6 months ago, was talking about two restaurants. It was in Utah, across the street from each other. One restaurant couldn't hire people. Could not hire people. It was like they were paying top dollar wage, you know, recruiting like crazy, couldn't do it. The place on the other side was a great place to work. They didn't have to worry about hiring people.
Nope.
They said, we don't worry about hiring people and they don't pay the best. It's like, it is that simple. If you have create a good place to work where people are valued and they think they can go in and contribute.
Yeah. And I hear the people in Utah are hungry. So that's good.
Yeah, that's good. Good stuff. Well, Andrew, thanks so much for being here today. Hey, thanks for sharing with us your thoughts on the dangers of economic hostages.
Thank you so much, David. I had a blast.
Yes. All right, everyone. We'll be back again with another episode of The Faces of Business. Andrew, hang out for a moment. We'll talk.
All right.